current Tom Cruise blockbuster, Edge of Tomorrow, is the latest example of a movie that's an exercise in time warp cinema, a story with loops in time and narrative. Other examples include Sliding Doors, Donnie Darko, and of course, Groundhog Day. Coming up next on Central Standard, the film critics return to review flicks currently showing at your local Cineplex, and we want to know what you think. What did you see that was worthwhile, and which films should people avoid? We'll take your calls, and we'll find out what time warp movies have worked for you and which ones have failed. Join me, Russ Simmons, and my fellow film critics on the next Central Standard. That's coming up right after this hour's news. And good morning, Kansas City, and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM, and since I'm sitting in the host seat today, it means it's movie day. And I'm joined by my fellow film critics.
Good morning, it's Marie Asner with HonorPrep.com and PhantomTollbooth.org.
And Tom Park, teach film studies at UMKC.
And we'll be talking about movies that have opened up over the last month or so in the Kansas City metro area, and we'll be reviewing movies that have opened in local theaters over the last month or so, and we'll be reviewing movies that have opened up over the last month or so in the Kansas City area. And the reason I'm talking this way is because we'll also be talking about time loop movies. That's a subgenre of the time travel genre. And you know what? It's interesting that there should be so many examples of this. When you think back on all of the movies that have played with time narratives and have caused the stories to come back on one another, it really plays in to, I think, a really strong human need that we have, a desire that we have to go back and change mistakes that we've made in the past. There have been a lot of movies, so we'd like your feedback. Not only would we like to hear what you've seen over the last month or so that you think was worth your money, let us know also what we should avoid. And you can call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also reach us at centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us at KCURCST. We want to hear from you. And if you have a favorite time loop movie that pops into your mind, let us know what that would be. And the reason we're going to talk about that today is because the number one film at the worldwide box office right now stars Tom Cruise. And it's a movie that plays with a time loop, and it's called Edge of Tomorrow. Tom?
Yes, Russ. I'll just follow up with your comments about time loop movies. You know, when we first thought about making that sort of a theme to talk about today, I thought, well, there's Groundhog's Day, but I don't know, there's not many. And then I started thinking about it, and I was just amazed at how many time loop films are. And we are starting off with, in fact, what's going to be, I think, one of the sort of memorable classic time loop movies, and that's this summer's action-adventure movie, Edge of Tomorrow, starring Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. Ironically, who is back in a time loop. If you remember, she was the star of Looper
right.
In 2012. This is epic action. And sci-fi, it unfolds in the near future where, of course, an alien race has hit the Earth with an unrelenting assault. Everything seems lost. And Tom Cruise plays Major William Cage. Now, while he's a major, in fact, he's one of those types that has never seen a moment of combat, and he's a media specialist. And suddenly he finds himself dropped into what is basically a suicide mission. And this may seem like I'm giving away too much, but since we're talking about time loops, I think we have to say that, in fact, what's going to take place is he's going to be on that battle on that suicide mission more than one time.
That's right.
It's going to loop and loop and loop and loop and loop so that he continues to live out the same brutal combat over and over, fighting and, in fact, dying. You know, this is really a film which goes back and will maybe talk about this later in the show, to Chris Marker's great French art film, Le Jet. And then it was kind of, that was the inspiration for Terry Gilliam's 1995 12 Monkeys and many others. what I think makes this film really good is that it's super well made. And in many ways, it doesn't make sense. But while I was watching it, I was totally caught up in it. Here's what I think makes it work and what really amazed me, and I think particularly for today's generation. We think of these action-adventure movies these days as video games, but this takes that to its really logical conclusion. This is like playing a video game where the first time you play it, you're not very competent and your avatar gets wiped out. And so you then play it again. And every time you play it, your skill gets a little better and you get to move into the narrative one more step down the road until you hopefully can either master ultimately the video game. I think that's much of what makes this film really fascinating is the way that it participates, has us participating in what it's like to play a video game. I also think that this is a real wise career move for Tom Cruise. I've been, like a lot of Americans, pretty much over Tom Cruise for a while in action-adventure movies. But here, he doesn't play his sort of cocky action-adventure hero. But in fact, it's a dude who has to win back his reputation in some ways. And I think that was really smart.
How apropos, right?
Very apropos. And so it's really good to see him sort of knocked down and then have to sort of work his way back into our affection and admiration. So I'm going to give this 4 stars.
4 out of 5 stars for Edge of Tomorrow from Tom. You know, it's interesting you should bring that up about Tom Cruise, because I was talking to a friend of mine who really reluctantly went to this film. And he said, I didn't want to like it because I don't like Tom Cruise. I'm just not a Tom Cruise fan. He said, but I did. I thought it was really good. Marie, what did you think of it?
Well, yes, it's a Tom Cruise movie. But, you know, Emily Blunt comes into her own here, too. And I don't want to use the term feminist, but I'm going to say this is a strong woman's role for her because she is a soldier. In fact, she's on the poster for Soldiers. You don't see the guys up there. You see her in battle attire. Excuse me. And as the plot goes along, we find out that she's also caught in a time loop. The only way to get out of it is if somebody gives you a blood transfusion. Otherwise, you get into the time loop by your body absorbing the blood of one of the aliens. And so it's avoiding the medics, actually, going through the film. She figures out that Cruise is in this with her, and then it's how to escape. And so they keep dying together, and each time they come back, it's a different way. It's a, you know, they're trying to move forward to a conclusion. And as they were moving forward and they were finding out exactly where the aliens were in Europe, it reminded me of a World War I movie with all the, you know, the alien is a certain place in Paris, and Verdun is mentioned. And so I thought, you know, somebody took World War I and put together a science fiction story for this. The aliens look something like aliens.
Exactly.
Well said.
Yeah, if you can picture something in your mind, that's about it. I thought it was a creative story as far as people dying. I think that I counted something like 26 ways that they died before they figured out exactly what to do. And I won't give the ending away, but I was, like everyone else here, Tom Cruise was kind of fading from sight. And you thought, oh, you know, I did like Oblivion of last year. I was probably the only critic who did. And then I thought, well, okay, I'll go to see this one. And I was caught up in the story because he was not the hero. He was trying to get away and dragged into the battle lines and you know, a hero by accident. I'm going to give it 3.5 stars.
I like the... Go ahead. I'm sorry, Tom.
Well, I'd just like to follow up one thing, because I think it's so right about Emily Blunt is so necessary in this movie, and she's really, really good. Oh, and she does Tom Cruise a big favor in his rehabilitation. He needed to be pitted with a non-Katie Holmes.
Ah, okay.
To well, sort of right. teach him how to be a man.
Well, you know, this is sort of, you know, to make it as simple as possible, Independence Day meets Groundhog Day.
Yes.
And it's that description just means that he has to relive this day over and over again, and he's fighting aliens that have invaded Earth. And that pretty much sums it up. Now, you would think from that premise that this couldn't be any good, but the fact is it is. It's very good. And that's you can say that Doug Liman, the director, has a lot of credit, because he's the one who really managed to put this thing together in a way that made it completely believable, and you were able to follow all of the time loops without any difficulty. And it also has a streak of humor that was really welcome that I think helps the film a lot. The production values are fantastic. So this movie works on so very many levels that it's really surprising. But as with all time loop movies, as with all time travel movies, if you think about it too hard, ultimately it will fall apart. So just don't. Just go. Enjoy the ride. And I think this is a very entertaining movie. And I'm giving it a 4. So I think between the three of us here, we can average it out to a 4 for Edge of Tomorrow, which is rated PG-13.
Yes, and I have a question. Is this an original script, or was this from a graphic novel?
I believe it's an original script, although it owes a lot to, I know many of our listeners will recall the book Replay, which has been bandied about many times as fodder for a movie, and it's just never happened, and it ought to happen. It's a great book, and it would make a great movie. So have you seen any time loop movies that you thought were really good? Give us a call, 816-235-2888, or let us know about any of the other movies that you've seen over the last month or so that you think are or are not worth our money. And we'd appreciate your feedback. And you can also send us a tweet at KCURCST. Now, speaking of movies that I think are probably worth your money, maybe you might disagree with this, Marie, but one of them is Maleficent.
Oh, I agree. Maleficent, yes. Maleficent is for Angelina Jolie fans, and also she has her own daughter, Vivian, Pitt Jolie or Jolie Pitt, excuse me, as the only child actor, I guess, who could act with her when she got her her outfit on with the black horns and everything.
Scary looking.
Yes, and there was a really cute sequence here where the little child plays the young princess, and she wanders into the forest, and she meets this woman with black horns. And they discuss something, and the child is not frightened. But when the camera turns on the child, she is the spitting image of Brad Pitt. I thought that was very clever for just that 1 second to see that. This is a story about a woman who is betrayed, a young girl, by humans. And so she lives on the moors. And forever after, there's a barrier between the moors and the rest of the people. And Stefan, the king, decides that he's going to, be the bad king for riches and glory and so on. But he doesn't figure on the fact that he's going to get married and he's going to have a daughter and somebody is over there in the moors plotting revenge. But revenge works two ways. Revenge can be bad on some people. Revenge can go back on you and maybe make you rethink things. And that's kind of what the plot of this is. I thought Angelina Jolie played her part very well. There's very little dialogue, actually, in the film. There's a lot of facial expressions where the camera just goes ahead and watches everyone. Every Disney film, though, has to have a sidekick, and Jolie has one in a shapeshifter, and he does the part of the raven, and he's the cat, he's whatever needs to be happen. And when the baby is there, and they're secretly watching it, then we go ahead and have his little claws there rocking the cradle. I won't take any more time with this, but I was quite in, and the soundtrack is very good, too. I'm going to give this 3.5.
Yeah, I liked it, too. I'm going to give it a 3. Maleficent is good for one reason and one reason only, and that's the terrific performance by Angelina Jolie. It's got good production values, but I had a problem with who this movie was aimed at. It's too scary for very little kids, and it's a little too milquetoast for adults, but it's worth seeing for Angelina Jolie, so I'm going to give it a 3.
I had the very same reaction, Russ, about the audience, for that very same reason. Oh, I will say, in addition to the wonderful campy performance by Angelina Jolie, memorable for the makeup, because, boy, are these the great cheekbones in cinema history. You know what this is, though, and I was kind of underwhelmed, in fact. It's a mix of Frozen and, in fact, the popular Hollywood musical and upcoming December big release of Wicked. But I think the reason to see the film ends up being, of course, the performance of Angelina Jolie. It's got a good progressive message about the value of a chosen family over simple biology. But the story, I think, doesn't make a lot of sense. Why, to protect her, her father sends her to the land that's run by, in fact, his enemies. And the animation left me a little underwhelmed. But it's good enough, and I'm going to give it 3 stars.
Okay, so that's a 3 for Maleficent, rated PG. And as I said, that PG, you could argue that it probably should be a PG-13 because of the violence that is involved in this movie. but it's got those great Disney production values. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR, and you can give us a call to join the conversation at 816-235-2888. And one caller wants to talk about her favorite time shift movie, and she's going to call us back in the second half. And you don't have to wait to the second half. You can go ahead and call us now, or you can talk about any movie that you've seen over the last month or so. We'd love to hear from you. Summer is known for a time when movies are for kids. However, sometimes they have a few movies for adults. And I've had a lot of people ask me about one of those, and it's Jersey Boys. Jersey Boys is the big screen adaptation of the smash hit Broadway musical about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, one of the top pop rock groups of the 60s and 70s. And of all people, Clint Eastwood is the director of this film, and he wouldn't maybe seem like the logical first choice, but when you think about it, here's a guy who really loves music, and here's a guy who's made musical biopics in the past. So he does a competent job here. It's a beautifully produced movie, but the reason the movie works is because of the music. It's very melodramatic and very episodic, and it's in some cases very slow-moving, but those elements... you can kind of look past those if you really love the music of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, as so many people do, because they sold over 100 million records. So they've got some fans out there. And it's different from the stage show in that it's obviously more literal, given the fact that it's a movie. But the slow pace is the only thing really that works against it. And so I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 stars. But mainly because of the music. And we have a call from somebody who wants to chat about her favorite time shift movie. And we want to welcome Daisy into the conversation. Hi, Daisy. Daisy?
Yes.
Hi, welcome aboard.
Thank you. I want to recommend Run, Lola, Run.
That was on our list,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, I'm not much for... magical realism. I'm not much for science fiction. I'm not much for any of that genre. But I could watch Run, Lola, Run just for the music, but I could watch Run, Lola, Run again and again and again and again. And there's so much layering in it. And the way he filmed it with like even the train is just a skosh shorter in one revolution than the next. I mean, I think, and it's basically a love story, and I'm down with that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's interesting. It's a crime thriller, but it's also shot in both film and in video to contrast the scenes, and you do see this woman going through the this same loop of incidents time after time after time, just like
that worthless Manny.
That's, I mean, you got that right.
Come on, Lola.
You know, this is a movie from 1998, so it's really, you got to give it credit for being ahead of its time.
I'm so glad you called in, because it's one of my very favorite films.
Oh, good.
And I think it's so sort of basically unknown to so many people. Mm-hmm. But wow, this is a film for anyone to check out. It's just terrific fun.
Thanks for your...
I was going to say, even if you're put off, it is subtitled because it's in German, but if you're put off by subtitles, honestly, I think you could get the gist of this with just watching it.
I think you're right. That's a great recommendation, Daisy. Appreciate your call.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye. We are talking time loop movies, and we're talking about any movies that have come up over the last month or so. So you can give us a call as well at 816-235-2888. And let's move on to talk about one. You know, sequels usually aren't as strong as the original, but I think this might be a case where there's an exception, and it's called How to Train Your Dragon 2. Marie?
Oh, I have waited for this film to come, and it finally did. I was enchanted with the first film. The second one, I think, is better than the first one. I'm going to say right away, I rarely give a 4, but I'm going to give it a 4. The story is more complicated, which is not a bad thing. The visuals are spectacular, but I will say that you don't have to see it in 3D, but the flying sequences brought butterflies to my stomach in 2D, so 3D might be a little bit much for children. It's a continuation of the story of a Viking village with dragons that they love, that they used to hate, And it's set 5 years in the future. So now we have the lead person, Hiccup, who was an adolescent and now an adult with a girlfriend and so on. But he's going out exploring, and he discovers new lands. And wow, does he discover new lands with, you know, different dragons and so on, but also an enemy. And so that's what the gist of the story is, because somebody wants to conquer the world. Ho-hum, where have we heard that before? We see dragons that are enormous. Look out, Godzilla, here they come. And all in all, it's a very good story, a love story. A love story between parents, a love story between a young man and his girlfriend, and maybe even a love story between some dragons. And then all in all, in the middle of them, we have the rare black dragon, the little one called Toothless. And Toothless ends up being a good hero for everyone, and you want to, you know, cheer on for him. There is a sad part in this. I'm not going to give anything away, but bring handkerchief for a certain part. It's not going to be a surprise. But all in all, that's my four.
Okay. Tom?
I love this movie. I can make it short.
We'll see it again.
Yes. Oh. I tell you, it's just stunningly beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think the scoring is really top-notch. I think Hiccup plays just perfectly kind of that adolescent boy trying to sort of find out who he really is. The story is touching. I cried, I will admit it, really. Touched me. And that's my highest praise, is that when you have something which is a big sort of animated kind of 3D film, and I will say that I'm oftentimes not all that crazy about 3D, but I thought this was one film that's kind of worth the extra money. I think those flying dragons are really terrific in 3D. But it's the heart and soul of the film that really won me over. So, yeah, it's a big four for me.
Yeah, I'm giving it a four as well. You know, this is in the original film, from a few years ago, the flying sequences were really breathtaking, and as you said, particularly in 3D, they outdid themselves this time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the flying sequences are even better this time out, and it really gives you, you know, an amazing sense of the soaring freedom that Hiccup and his dragon are enjoying, and really puts you right into their boots, so to speak, And the storyline is touching, as you said, Tom. So I agree with everything you said. So we give How to Train Your Dragon rated PG a big four from all three of us. We agree this one's definitely worth your money. And I would agree with you, Tom, that, you know, why not spend a little bit extra for the 3D at perhaps one of the really nicer theaters, because I think you'll find that it's probably worth the extra money. Let's move on to a documentary that opened on the 13th. Tom, this is about a famous illustrator named Robert Stedman, and it's called For No Good Reason.
Yes, this is a pretty straightforward sort of documentary. Ralph Stedman, of course, was the famed artist that always worked with Hunter Thompson in his Fear and Loathing books, and I can remember as a college kid those illustrations by Ralph Stedman were really frightening. It's a part of the sort of psychedelic era that I was growing up in. And one, of course, big fan of all of that tradition is Johnny Depp, who played, in fact, Hunter Thompson in the film Fear and Loathing. And so Johnny Depp, in fact, sort of is here to basically guide us through the career of Ralph Stedman. And one of the fun things is that Hunter Thompson was such a wild, crazy man, and Ralph Stedman, surprisingly, is such a gentle kind of guy next door. And that sort of is much of what makes the documentary really kind of interesting, is the playing off of their friendship. And you get sort of interviews, talking heads with Monty Python's Terry Gilliam and film folks like Tim Robbins. One can understand why Johnny Depp would be interested in participating in this, though I have a feeling he's primarily there to give an unassuming documentary some star power. But it's surprisingly good, and I give it 3 stars.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 3 stars is probably appropriate. This is an intriguing documentary, mainly because of the subject matter and not necessarily because of the execution. It's a little episodic and slow-moving, but you're right. Ralph Stedman is an interesting character, and his work is very disturbing. It's very ugly, and it's that kind of provocative art that you may hate, but you have to appreciate because of its effectiveness. And Stedman is given his due. So, you know, you say, you know, Thompson used to say they were doing it for no good reason. Well, there is a good reason for this, and that's to give Stedman his due. So right. I'm with you. I'm giving it 3 out of 5 stars for no good reason, which is rated R because of some of that disturbing material. We're going to be continuing our conversation with movies that we've seen over the last month or so, and we'll also be talking again about time loop movies. What were some of your favorites? You can give us a call at 816-235-2888 or send us a tweet at KCURCST. We'll also have some announcements right after this break. And welcome back to the show. I'm Russ Simmons, joined by my fellow film critics Marie Asner and Tom Poe. We're talking about movies that have opened up over the last month or so. And we're also spending a little time chatting about time loop movies, an amazingly fruitful subgenre of movies that have really produced some outstanding and very entertaining films. And we're going to be talking about those. And we want to hear from you as well. What time loop movies have worked for you and which ones have failed? Give us a call, 816-235-2888, or send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org, or tweet us at KCURCST. And before I jump in and make a few announcements, Prudence has been waiting very patiently on the phone to recommend a film that she has seen recently from Overland Park. Hi, Prudence. Welcome aboard.
Hi there. I wanted to talk about the movie Chef, which I thought was not only a heartwarming relationship story, but also just a great tale about finding and living your passion. You guys were talking about music in films. This one has great music. And, oh, my God, the food. You just have to eat before you go to see the movie. Because, and the people who did the sound in this have to win the Oscar for sound effects, because the sizzle, the smell, you could almost smell everything he was fixing. And I know for myself, I will never make a grilled cheese sandwich in my old bad way again. I'm going to definitely follow Jon Favreau's chef.
You are absolutely right. I thought this film was really good as well. And I was just talking earlier with our announcer, Linda Scher, and she had seen that movie. And I'm going to call her out because she really enjoyed it and said that she immediately went to a restaurant and had a Cuban sandwich and also grilled cheese after the movie.
We were like, find the first restaurant now, because we were so hungry when we came out of the film. It was really a good movie, though, too. It had a lot to say about, as I said, about finding yourself and living your passion. And I just thought it was a wonderful film.
I will say one thing about it that I have a minor criticism, and that is that it's rated R because of the language. And had they cleaned up the language a little bit, it would have been perfect for the whole family.
I was just going to say this, somewhat the same thing. There's no violence, and so rare. There's, not any real sex scenes. It's really, truly about people, as we know today.
Right.
And I agree. If they'd cleaned up the language, more families could enjoy this wonderful film.
Hey, Prudence, thanks so much for your call. Really appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome.
Okay. And we are talking about movies that have opened up over the last month or so, as well as the time loop movies. And we had a call from Mike in Overland Park who suggests 12 Monkeys as a top time loop movie. And I completely agree. As a matter of fact, it was on, I have an alphabetical list, but so obviously it's going to be right up there at the top. But that's a 1995 film with Bruce Willis and Brad Pitt. And a convict is sent back to post-apocalyptic Earth to save the world from a virus. It's a very intriguing movie, and that's a great recommendation as well. We appreciate that. And here's someone else who wants to jump in on the conversation really quick, and that's Joseph from Lawrence. Hi, Joseph. Welcome aboard.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
So you were asking for good time loop movies, and I actually have a couple of theories to share both the old and the new Planet of the Apes series.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Planet of the Apes, that makes sense. You don't want to maybe give too much away about how it's time-looped, for those of you who may have not have seen it. But, it's a great recommendation. And, of course, the sequel to the reboot of the series is
coming up,
which is actually our prequels to Planet of the Apes.
So we're going to be going back to the future of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, in the near past future.
And that opens in July,
I think. I'm so confused. Hey, Joseph, thanks so much for the recommendation. Appreciate it.
No problem.
I do have a few quick announcements, things going on in the Kansas City Metro that are film related, and we'll have more information on our website about all of these things very soon. One is GLOW, which is a documentary premiere, which is June 29th, and it's sponsored by the Kansas City Women in Film and Television. And it's a short documentary about Girls Leading Our World, a Kansas City-based nonprofit which is serving at-risk girls. And once again, that's Sunday the 29th at the Screenland Crown Center. And we'll, again, have more information on that at kcur.org. And on Thursday, June 26th at 7:30, as part of the Gather Film Series, Finding Hillywood, which is going to be at the Glenwood Arts. And it's set amongst the hills of Rwanda. And Finding Hillywood chronicles the one man's road to forgiveness and his efforts to heal his country. And that, as I say, is part of the Gather Film Series, which is a fundraiser for the Kansas Film Festival. The Screenland Crown Center's Friday Night Comedy Classics with a frozen bar and a movie, and Saturday Morning Fabulous Films with brunch and a movie. Those series are continuing. June 20th, that's tonight, at 9 o'clock is The Bar, and at 10 o'clock, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And on June 21st, Saturday morning, breakfast at 10 a.m., followed by a movie at 11, the classic musical An American in Paris. The Kansas City Public Library is continuing its Hollywood's Greatest Year, a year-long celebration of the movies of 1939. And coming up on Saturday the 21st at 1:30 p.m., right after you watch American in Paris, you're going to get in your car and drive over to the Durwood Film Vault at the Central Library to see In Name Only. That's a classic comedy starring Cary Grant and Carol Lombard from 1939. And finally, the Out Here Now Festival, the 15th annual Kansas City LGBT Film Festival, is continuing through July 3rd at the Tivoli Theater. And just a personal highlight, I think the one looking at the lineup, the one that I would want to see is To Be Takei, a documentary about George Takei, who played Sulu from Star Trek.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And he's become a social media superstar in his golden years thanks to Facebook and Twitter. And so you can find more information on all of these events at kcur.org. Once again, we are talking about movies that have opened up over the last month or so and time loop movies. And so give us a call, 816-235-2888.
I just missed the location of the breakfasts.
That's at the Screenland Crown Center.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You bet. Let's go ahead and pick up where we left off talking about some movies that have opened up over the last month or so. And one is a comedy called A Million Ways to Die in the West.
We just looked on our schedule, and we're not sure it's in town this week.
It's still playing.
Is it still playing? Okay.
This is a Seth MacFarlane comedy, rated R, and it's got a hard R rating for content and language. And this is a kind of a Blazing Saddles wannabe, but it fails in almost every respect, in my opinion. This is I liked Ted, which was Seth MacFarlane's last film, but this one, it just seems like it was pushing the envelope a little too hard and just didn't work. I think A Million Ways to Die in the West bites the dust. So I'm going to give it a 1.5. Tom?
Well, it may be better than Seth MacFarlane in The Tooth Fairy, as much as I can say. I totally agree. I'm not going to take a lot of time. I'm going to say it does want to be Blazing Saddles, and it isn't. 1.5 is what I put down to.
Okay. Anne Marie?
60% interesting and 40% no. I'll move with you 1.5.
1.5. That's our dismissal of A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Out.
Yeah. If you have a different opinion, if you liked it, you thought it was worth your money, give us a call, 816-235-2888. And Joseph called that number, and Joseph wants to recommend a movie. Joseph from Blue Springs, welcome to the conversation. Joseph?
Hi. I'm not sure how much of a time loop movie it is, but I really enjoyed Cloud Atlas by the Wachowski siblings. It's a great movie, and there's storylines to interweave through multiple millennia, and it's a really beautiful film to watch too.
This production values are pretty stupendous, and it has the best and maybe worst makeup of the year. So some of them look great and some of them not quite so much. What was it that you really liked about it, Joseph?
I like how it utilizes multiple actors in all of the storylines, and there's this consciousness that they don't really figure out that they're connected to all of these different periods of time.
Right. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate your call.
Sure.
And let's talk about another movie that opened up back on June 6th, which is based on the popular young adult novel. It's called The Fault in Our Stars. Marie?
Well, I think we've been saying at just about every film that we've talked about, bring handkerchief. bring two handkerchiefs to this one. We've had novels in the past, for the past 20 or 30 years, about an adult dealing with a fatal illness. But this one is about teens under the age of 18. We have a young girl and a young guy, and they're dealing it with in their own particular way. They're defiant about what's going to happen, and they want to live life to the fullest, and they hook up, they meet, and it's a little abrasive at first, but then all of a sudden it's like star-crossed lovers, and away we go. And it's a wonderful story, but it is really on you emotionally, especially when they take a trip and they go to Anne Frank, you know, and of course she was, we understand her situation a long time ago. And I felt manipulated through this, very much so. The star's acting is wonderful. Shailene Woodley is, the young woman, Hazel, it's turned out to be quite an actress. It's how people handle grief at any age, and we have stages of grief. And you find out that sarcasm can be an ally sometimes. The first thing they think of is when somebody talks to them is to throw out a sarcastic remark as a defense weapon. And sometimes it becomes just a little bit much to have this. But both stars, I see, are going to have bright futures after this. And I'm going to give it probably 3.
Tom?
Actually, I love this movie. I'm of the generation that didn't know much about young adult sort of best-selling novels. But before the film came out, actually the New Yorker magazine did a profile on John Green, the author, that I found really fascinating. So I kind of got into learning more about sort of the devotion that his teenage fans have to his work and, in fact, his website. I went to the film much more interested than I thought I was going to be. And wow, it just really worked on me. I think Shailene Woodley, who was awfully good in The Descendants, though, this is going to be an award-winning actress one of these days. Oh, I wouldn't even mind her getting a nomination for this role. And Ansel Elgott, her boyfriend, Gus, is just about as adorable as a guy deserves to be. And I tell you, the great thing about this movie is just sort of as a experience. I sat in a theater filled with mostly young 14, 15, 16-year-old girls, and I have a feeling that they'd seen it before because it was just like being sort of in call and response and being at church in some ways, a way that they would laugh at everything funny and then all just have a mutual sob session, which I found irresistible and found myself. They had one male boy sort of in the back of the theater that they could hear sobbing right along. Here's what I tell you. You can say it's kind of manipulative, but maybe so is Romeo and Juliet. And so there's a long tradition of that. Here's my one takeaway. If you're a parent of a teenager who loves this book and loves this movie, I'd say you're a very lucky parent.
And how many stars out of 5?
I'm going to give it 4 stars.
4 stars. You know, I don't think we're too far apart, Tom. I like this film much better than I thought I would. The plot devices are extremely contrived. It is, as you said, manipulative. Marie, you're completely right. But the cast members bring an authenticity to this heartbreaking tale. So if they were selling Kleenex along with the popcorn at the concession stand, they'd be cleaning up. So I'm going to give it a 3.5. So let's average it out. You said we got a 3, a 3.5, and a 4. So that's 3.5 average for The Fault in Our Stars, rated PG-13.
Oh, and Russ, can I just add one last sentence about this? Oh, I'm the generation that made a classic out of Love Story.
Right.
This is so much better than Love Story.
I agree.
That I think it's going to be actually worthy of sort of the cult devotion that this generation is going to carry for a long time about this movie.
We're talking about movies that have opened up over the last month and time loop movies. And give us a call, 816-235-2888. And we also got an email from Christopher from Overland Park, who recommends Memento. And interestingly enough, our producer, Sylvia Maria Gross, that was what she named as her favorite time loop movie. And that qualifies, and that's an awfully good one. That's Christopher Nolan's breakthrough film. Very, very intriguing film noir, time loop, and it is a very, very well-made movie. So that's a great recommendation. And speaking of recommendations, Dwight from Lawrence is on the air with us right now to give us a recommendation about a movie. Hi, Dwight.
Hello. Yes, a pleasant break in the Tom Cruise superhero image is Night and Day, where it's kind of a spoof on his own image. That, I mean, he still does everything, but it's not in a serious way.
Yeah, understood. You know? Yeah. It's you know, a lot of people didn't appreciate the tongue-in-cheek approach that that movie took, but you obviously are one who did.
Yeah, it was refreshing.
Okay, thanks so much. Appreciate your call, Dwight. And let's bring aboard Alexi from Olathe, who wants to talk about a time loop movie. Hi, Alexi.
Hey, I wanted to recommend a more recent movie called Looper.
Yeah, it's definitely on my list.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was a much, much darker movie than I expected it to be, but it was
Yeah, Joseph.
Good. I like it a lot.
You bet. Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis star in this movie. It's about mobsters send their victims back in time where the assassin awaits to take care of them.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah. Very, very well-made movie. It's actually one Tom brought up earlier because Emily Blunt is starring in another time loop movie right now, Edge of Tomorrow, and she's the female lead in Looper. So that's a great recommendation. Thanks a lot, Alexi.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Let's move on and talk with Wesley from Blue Springs. Hi, Wesley. Whoops. Wesley, I hit the wrong button. I apologize. Give us a ring back and we'll get you on right away. Let's also go to someone who's calling us from Paola. Welcome aboard, Paola. I didn't get the names, but if you're from Paola, you are on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Okay, we missed Paola, but give us a call back. We'll get you on just as soon as we can. And let's go ahead and move. We got some calls on the board here, which we'll be getting to here in just a minute. But let's go ahead and talk about another film that opened up recently in Kansas City area theaters. And that is 22 Jump Street. It's one I didn't get a chance to see, but it is ringing the cashier's bells at the box office. Tom?
I can't wait to talk about this, in part because one of the fun things is that since our theme is time loop, in a kind of crazy, jokey way, we could almost consider this a time loop movie. And what I mean by that isn't the narrative, but in fact it's the ultimate satire on movie sequels, as in fact just simply repeating the film before, so that here we are kind of returning to the 21 Jump Street TV series, and then 21 Jump Street the film, and then 21 Jump Street the sequel, and now the next sequel, which is 22 Jump Street. So we have this comedy with Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum playing totally incompetent cops that went through high school twice, and now they do get to move forward just a little bit, and now they, in fact, are undercover at a college. What's really terrific, I think, and I like this comedy a whole lot, not only does it constantly sort of deconstruct the whole kind of notion of the Hollywood, sort of stupid, dumb and dumber, kind of buddy bromance films, but the fun of this film is the way that, in fact, it doesn't use sort of homophobic comedy, in fact, as comedy, but it's what has been considered meta-homophobic. It really is making fun of, in fact, sort of the underlying homoeroticism of the bromance film.
And how many stars would you give it, Tom?
I'm going to give it 4.
Okay.
But I will tell you this, stay to the end of the credits. Because
definitely, yes.
It's a short film in itself.
Yes.
Marie, could you quickly give us your take on 22 Jump Street?
Yeah, I liked it better than I thought. They got me when they were talking about the churches where they had their businesses. One was the Aroma of Christ and the other was the Resurrection of the Holy Spectacle. I probably played at one of those.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it is... And they tell you all the way through that this is like the first film. I mean, they just keep giving it to you all the time. The new discovery in this is Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell's son, who looks very much like the family, and he turns out to be a very good actor. I'm giving it 3 stars.
Okay, so that's 3.5 averaged out for 22 Jump Street, rated R, and as I understand it, does earn that R rating. So,
oh, yes, adult film.
Right. Let's bring Matt into the conversation. Matt from Kansas City South. How are you, Matt?
I'm fine. How are you guys doing?
Well, doing well.
I called in, like lots of people, Groundhog Day is really one of my favorite movies. I relate to it really well. But a very effective movie, I thought, was Butterfly Effect. I did not like it as an enjoyable movie, but it was very effective. It just was a grim replaying of this guy's life over and over again.
Right, that starred Ashton Kutcher.
Yes, yeah, just that grim replay of bad parts of his life.
Right.
Trying to change it and make it better.
Right. Hey, thanks. That's a great recommendation. Appreciate your call.
Okay.
All righty. Now we're moving on to Ted. Ted's calling us from Gladstone. Hi, Ted.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. I called about Bet, and I hadn't heard anyone talk about Bet yet, and I thought Professor Tom would like to talk about it.
And what is Bet?
Bet is a historical novel. It was a film about a black woman in England.
Oh, that's Belle.
Oh, Belle. B-E-L-L-E. Yes, okay.
Yeah, I said Bet. Belle, sorry. And I really enjoyed it, but I hadn't heard people talk about it very much.
We actually reviewed that on the last show, but Tom, if you want to give a quick summary.
Yes, all I can say is what's reviewed. It's a terrific film that, in fact, is historically an important story about sort of Belle being an interracial young lady, but actually back in a period of time that we don't normally sort of have stories about in the 18th century. So I highly recommend it. I think it's a terrific film with great performances.
Yeah, I liked it as well. Dan emailed that Primer is a good example of a time loop movie, and I completely agree. It's a 2004 low-budget sci-fi flick that rang a lot of bells at Sundance. An entrepreneur and scientist creates a time machine and gets in trouble when he tries to reap the financial benefits of it. So that's a really, really good recommendation. And now we're going to go a recommendation from Wesley in Blue Springs. Hi, Wesley.
Hi there.
You have a recommendation for us?
Well, I was just going to say, I really enjoyed the new Star Trek series, the reboots of those, how they reimagined, you know, the entire whole series and restarted it over.
Yeah, and they had to go through time loops to to do that, to make this new universe for them.
Yeah, and so they take a whole bunch of the old TV series shows, like the last one, Into Darkness with Khan, but they did a twist on it, and I find it really kind of neat how they've gone back in time and reinvented the whole series.
I completely agree. I think that they actually improved upon it.
Yeah, I would say so.
Thanks, Wesley. Appreciate your call. All right, now we're going to Charlie, who has a recommendation for us from Fontana. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. I just joined the conversation a few minutes ago. Don't know if you've had this movie on as a time loop, but Somewhere in Time. One of my all-time favorites.
It's on our list, yes.
Yeah, there's Christopher Reeve and
Jane Seymour.
Mm-hmm. It's become sort of a classic.
Oh, yes, and the soundtrack's wonderful.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Beautiful music, and, talk about having to have your handkerchief out. There's a great example.
Yes,
that's the Valentine's Day film.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Charlie, thanks for that recommendation. Really appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm. And we're now moving on to Chris. Hi, Chris. Doggone it. I did it again. I apologize, Chris. Give us a call back real quick, and we'll get your observation on. I got to be more careful with my big, fat, clumsy fingers when I reach down to push the button here. I did want to quickly talk about a couple of other films that have opened up recently. Tom, would you quickly give us some background on Ida?
Yes, Ida is an independent, sort of, I would call it a European art film from Poland. Very simply, a young woman who is a nun. And she's become a nun because as an infant, she was sort of raised within this convent. And she's going to, in fact, suddenly discover a truth that she had been unaware of, and that is that she was, in fact, Jewish. And this is going to lead to an incredible sort of identity crisis. It is a beautiful film in black and white, very intentionally slow moving. I would say it's because it's almost like a meditation, and a filmmaker gives you time, in fact, to sort of meditate about the meanings of this film. It's an acquired taste, and some people are going to find it just too slow. Others are going to find it incredibly moving. If you love sort of films of Robert Bresson. You're going to love this movie. I did. I'm going to give it 4 stars.
All right. That's Ida rated PG-13. I did want to quickly talk about another film, a really nihilistic Australian movie called Rover. It's by David Michaud, who's the director who gave us a really good film a few years ago called Animal Kingdom, a gangster film set in Australia. But this time, Guy Pearce and Robert Pattinson get set in the outback after the total financial collapse. And it's really a horrifically violent, exceedingly violent film that, I know that it has some intriguing ideas and it's well acted, but it's based on a punchline. And that's just, to my way of thinking, not quite enough to recommend a movie. So I'm going to give Rover a 2. And Think Like a Man 2 is a sequel to the Steve Harvey film from a couple of years back. Great cast, likable people, saddled with a really, really bad script. And, Kevin Hart is a terrific and funny comic, but he works so hard to wring the last word that the audience breaks into a sweat. I mean, it's really, really pushing it. So I'm only going to be able to give Think Like a Man 2 2 out of 5 stars. Susan emailed us to say, how about Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet as a time loop movie? That's a great movie. It's a little bit of a stretch maybe for time loop, but boy, it's an intriguing, interesting film, which kind of pushes the envelope.
It's
as well.
Loopy, at least, for sure.
I really liked it. As a matter of fact, that was my favorite film of that year. If you could give us one or two of your very top recommendations for time loop movies, Tom, what would it be?
Oh, I think 12 Monkeys would be up there at the very top. And, of course, I love Donnie Darko as one of my all-time favorites. Oh, so I think I might go with those.
And how about you, Marie?
I think probably The Time Traveler's Wife and one that was good at Sundance several years ago called Fetching Cody, about an old chair, like in Sanford and Son, that is the mechanism by which you time travel. And I would like to add something about a film that's still in town called Words and Pictures.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm going to give it 3.5. And if you want to hear poetry read the way it's supposed to be, it's Clive Owen. Juliette Binoche has got her own artwork as part of the film. It's about two teachers with opposite viewpoints of teaching, and they each one have a fault and how they deal with life. And I'm giving it 3.5.
And how many stars on that from you, Tom?
I'll give it 3.
Okay, 3 for Words and Pictures rated PG-13. We want to thank you for joining our conversation today. We want to apologize to those callers we didn't get around to. We'll maybe bring this topic up again sometime real soon. We had a lot of people that were interested. And you've been listening to Central Standard, the movie critic show. I'm Russ Simmons. I'd like to thank my fellow film critics, Tom Poe and Marie Asner, our producer, Sylvia Maria Gross, our announcer, Linda Scher. That's it for today. Enjoy your day.